Desafinado, Discord, the theme music for the WPKN program on books and book publishing. I am Hans Koning, a novelist and writer, and Scott Harris is my producer. We broadcast twice monthly. Why Discord? Because we try to stay away from the endless publicity about bestsellers and million-dollar advances, celebrities who only seemingly write their own memoirs, and we want to talk about literature, about serious writing and reading, and the future, if any, of book publishing. Today our guest is Carol Goldberg, who is the book editor of the Hartford Courant. She has been a bookwoman for 20 years.
We don't have anywhere near the amount of room for book reviews that the New York Times has, or that the LA Times has, or, you know, a number of other much larger papers. But we do have about a page and a half on Sundays that's devoted to book reviews and interviews. And during the week in our life section, sometimes there are stories that also have to do with authors or books that are, of timely interest. And in addition to that, we can do shorter, smaller pieces in our weekly Thursday calendar section, in which we usually will highlight authors who are coming to Connecticut to give a book reading or signings. That often, you know, affords us the opportunity to give sort of a mini review of their book in the context of telling people that, you know, someone is likely to be in their town soon talking about a book. So altogether, I don't know, roughly, this is a real ballpark guess, I would say maybe about 500 books a year get some mention, anything from a full-fledged interview piece that would also contain a book review, you know, down to these very short calendar pieces. That, of course, is, you know, the proverbial drop in a bucket, because there are literally, you know, tens of thousands of books that are being printed every year, but we do what we can.
No, it's terrific. Well, of course, everybody's always been dying to ask the New York Times book review, say, how do you pick your titles?
Yeah, now, you know, I don't know how they do it.
But how do you do it?
How do I do it? Well, every day I go downstairs to our mail room. This is how it all begins. I'll walk you through it. In the mail room, there are boxes and boxes of books that have been sent in, and I would say that during the busiest seasons of the year for publishing, I get more than 100 books a week, every week, sometimes maybe several hundred books a week.
Wow.
A friend of mine, Corky Van, who helps run the National Writers Workshop every year, we go down there together with our scissors, we open these packages, I sort through the books. There are some that I know I will not be interested in reviewing at all. Those remain in the mail room and don't make it upstairs to the third floor. Anything that has even a small chance of getting reviewed, we do bring upstairs. I sort them carefully by month of publication, and then I look through, you know, the upcoming books, say for the next 6 weeks, select the ones that I think might be worth taking a look at. Then there's the process of, you know, bringing some home each night or finding time during the working day to page through them. It's sort of an ongoing, rolling process all the time. You do this long enough, you sort of develop a sense of, you know, what's important.
Yeah.
There are certain books that, you know, are receiving so much national press that they become sort of an automatic choice. There are certain authors that I'm particularly fond of who, you know, I will always probably want to review whatever they may publish. There are others that are books that perhaps I've never heard of the author before at all, but I'll pick up a book and read a couple of pages, and if it holds my interest, it might be one of the ones that gets picked. It's very subjective. And I'm sure I'm, you know, I know that I am, you know, leaving out many more, you know, than I would ever have room to accommodate, and that's, you know, given the nature of the space that we have. But it all sort of comes down to a personal selection, and I have to believe that my choices are appealing to my readers, and from what my readers tell me, I think I'm doing it all right. But, you know, there are some terrific books that just never get reviewed by anybody, given the glut of books that are published.
But you are really the czar who has the first and last word on this.
Yeah, pretty much. It's really a terrible responsibility.
Yeah.
I mean, there are days, you know, I'll be standing there, you know, opening the books, and I'll look at something, and I'll think, gee, you know, I'm sure this author, you know, probably may have spent 10 years working on this, and you know what? It's not going to be one of the ones we're going to review, which is heartbreaking, and we know it, but, you know, the problems of available space and time and a not large budget to pay freelance reviewers all conspire against reviewing, you know, everything that's worthy of a review. We certainly don't get to all the books. There's no way, you know, no way around it. It's a sad fact.
Well,
I remember reading some statistics recently that said that in 2003, I think there were about 17,000 works of fiction published in the United States. That's, you know, overwhelming. Now, not all of those are books that are worthy of review, but even if a small percentage of them are, we're still not getting to all of those. And this is pretty much the same story with the New York Times, People Magazine, you know, the whole range from the most mass media publications to the much more intellectual ones. Nobody can keep up with the flood of books.
No, of course, but I think 500 is a, if you say five, I don't think there are many more novels. Say 500 novels a year are serious and important.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem so terrible.
Well, of the 500, there's a certain percentage of those would be nonfiction books too.
And right.
That's something else. I try to have at least one nonfiction book reviewed every Sunday, if possible, because that's, you know, also a very broad area, and there are a lot of really important books that fall into those categories too. And then there, you know, the books that are, you know, the not in between, but things that may not be strictly topical nonfiction, but memoir, biography, history. You know, they're not fiction. And those are enormous genres that, if you know, you could do nothing but those every week and you still wouldn't touch everything that's out there.
But am I correct in understanding that sort of books, bestsellers, I hate that word, I must admit.
Yeah, you're right.
You can't go around and you have to mention them, you have to write something about them.
Well, no, you know, I stay away from the big mass market popular authors.
I see.
Tom Clancy doesn't really need a review in the current. He's got millions of readers. John Grisham's got millions of readers. And there are a lot of, you know, women who also have, you know, Mary Higgins Clark. I mean, I'm not to denigrate the books, but they're sort of review proof.
Right.
They're going to be read by the people who love them, whether we say the book is a good example of their writing or a poor example of their writing. They really don't need us, I feel. So I don't usually ever review those. I try to keep more to the literary fiction titles and probably do, I would say, about maybe about 75% of the books over the course of the year that the current reviews fall into that category, the rest being a combination of, you know, anything from, say, Bob Woodward's latest book to memoir and biography.
So you have a distinct identity. I mean, you really are not just a minor New York Times. You have a different market and a different approach.
Yeah, I think so. And one other thing that I really do try to do, Connecticut being a state with such a wealth of excellent writers, if a Connecticut author has written a book, if I have four or five books of equal interest to me or equal merit any given week, and one of them is a Connecticut author or a New England-based author, I'm likely to choose that book on that basis alone.
I see.
Because I think people in this area are, you know, will perhaps relate to those writers more so, say, than a book of equal quality that may be set in California or written by somebody from another part of the country.
Yes.
Not to say that I never do those books. I do them. But, you know, I guess I have a sort of a bias towards writers who are familiar and, to some extent, neighbors.
No, of course. No, that's not a bias, of course. That's part of being a paper, right?
It's a preference.
Yeah. Because you are one of the few newspapers in the country, I think, who do this so seriously and explicitly. How many titles are there on your Sunday page?
Usually about five. And sometimes if it turns out to be a Sunday section that has extra room, then I will go to the wire services that the Current subscribes to, and I will, you know, look for books that I've already, you know, developed some sort of an interest in myself, and we can then draw on all the other papers who are owned by Tribune Company, as the Current is, and that would be the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, Newsday, Baltimore Sun, and the Sentinel papers in Florida.
Oh, wow.
All their book reviews go out on the wires, and we can all use each other's work. So that's a nice pool of, you know, that's at no additional cost to the Current. We can just pick them up off the wires. And in addition to those, we also can get book reviews done by Associated Press writers and the Knight Ridder, KRN, wire service, and some Washington Post as well. So there's a really large pool available. And, I mean, sometimes I will choose one of those purposely to be one of the five if it's, you know, something that's particularly well written.
But some of these papers are, compared to you, rather not to be elitist, but sort of not quite lowbrow, but not very literate-minded.
Well, I really couldn't fault the Chicago Tribune or the Los Angeles Times. They're, you know, a lot of the book reviews tend to be of good quality, the ones on the wires. And the ones that aren't of good quality, we just ignore.
Right.
We can pick the cream of the crop. So that's a wonderful source, you know, to be able to go to that.
Well, hold on to that. I'll come back to that in a moment. I wanted to ask you first before I forget. Do you have a stable of sort of freelance reviewers?
I have two main pools of reviewers. One is people who already work at the Hartford Current, who are reporters there, who are interested in books and perhaps have some expertise in a particular area because of what they cover on a daily basis. So that's probably my largest group. It's easy for me to work with people that are, you know, literally right there in the building with me. It's easy for us to have conversations about the books. It's just simpler. I don't have to mail the books out to them. It's just something I prefer to do because it's efficient.
Right.
And because I know their work and like the way they write. In addition to the reporters that I work with, I have a number of people. Kit Reed, who teaches at Wesleyan and is a novelist herself, is a frequent reviewer. There is a reviewer based in New York City named John Freeman, who writes for publications all across the country. It's amazing to me, he actually is able to make a living doing nothing but freelancing book reviews. And he's very sharp and very good and, is always on top of the latest things coming out. And I use him almost every week. And then, there are others as well, scattered around. So I actually have, any given week, many more people I could choose to ask for reviews, you know, than I have room for the reviews. That's a fortunate situation. I review myself. I usually have at least one from me every week, too.
You're listening to Literary Discord, WPKN book program, 89.5 FM. And our guest today is Carol Goldberg, who is the book editor of the Hartford Current. Carol.
Yes.
You said those fatal or fateful words, we get the cream of the crop, did you say that? Anyway,
well,
something about the cream of the milk or whatever.
The cream of the crop of the available wire service reviews, yes.
Yeah, but now, of course, the question is, but who decides what's the cream and what's the sour milk and what is the skim milk?
I wield enormous power in this job. It really is one of the most subjective jobs I've ever had in journalism, and I've been in journalism since about 1975. So it really does come down to making personal choices, and I think same way that, you know, someone might be blessed with musical talent or some kind of perfect pitch, I think I've got a pretty good eye and ear for what's a well-written review. And, you know, I just make my choices and keep on going.
Yes, no, I believe in that. I believe in you. But the thing is, will those books, those really, I have had a secret, very defeatistic theory that mm-hmm. the best stuff written is in drawers of, in desks, in God knows where, and it will never see the light of day.
Oh, you mean the books themselves?
Yes.
Yeah, I sort of misconstrued what you said. I was thinking, you know, how do I know what the good reviews are?
No, that's part of the battle, of course.
Oh, no question. There are probably works of true genius that no one's ever going to hear about. It's one of the saddest things in the world.
Yes.
I don't see any, chance that the system is likely to change anytime soon either. I had written a story myself in late December of last year, which I interviewed publishers, reviewers, publicists, authors, lots of librarians, bookstore owners, people from the whole spectrum, you know, who deal with books. Everyone absolutely agrees there are many more books being published, you know, than anybody can pay fair attention to, that there's just an overwhelming flood of books on the market, and that because of that, you know, it's inevitable that good works will be overlooked. But they all seem to feel that somehow, you know, enough quality books somehow manage to rise into, you know, into the public spotlight to kind of keep the system going. But there's, you know, there are too many books. There really are too many books being published every year.
Well, I'm not sure I go for that. I would say the problem is different, say, for music, where there's a certain consensus of opinion about good music and not so interesting music. Who is going to decide what this quality consists of? Does the book publishing world, as it is now, really have the power, the intellectual power and the independence of the money market to make the right choices?
Well, probably not all the time. I mean, I would agree with you that there's an awful lot of stuff that does get published that might have been better to leave the trees alone and, you know, not cut them down to make the paper for those books. The range of presses, from the academic presses to the very small presses, sometimes I think, you know, some pretty good books get published by those smaller presses, but I'm sure there are people who do not get published and really, you know, should, are just as good, if not better, than many who do. But it just seems to be, you know, this enormous machine that's, you know, chugging along the way it does, and I don't see much chance it'll change.
Well, you have done this for 20 years, right?
Yeah, well, I've done the book reviewing for 20 years. I've only been the books editor for about 2.5 years, so I'm kind of new at the, you know, books editor end of the process, but it's really very interesting.
But would you say that, take the whole thing in one fell swoop, in those 20 years which we have been a book person, have things gone better? Are things much worse, better, or more or less on the same keel?
Well, I can't really give you a 20-year overview of publishing because I was basically being asked to review certain books by whoever the books editor at the paper was at the time, and, you know, I focused only on what I was going to do. There were always wonderful books coming my way, and there still are wonderful books coming my way. So for me, as a reviewer, that hasn't changed. You know, there's like a feast of books out there, and you're just happy to get to write about however many you can do in the course of a year. Whether the general quality of what's being published in the United States has gone up or down in those 20 years, I'm not really sure I can answer that question.
Are there those people in right who are the defeatists, of which I am one, I must say, mm-hmm. who think that the book people, as they knew them, have almost vanished? If you have lunch with an editor, you talk about money instead of about books. And in general, of course, all the big corporations have swallowed up publishing houses.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't drive you to despair, so to speak?
Well, not entirely to despair. I don't like it. The same process is going on with newspapers. They're, you know, continuously being bought up by larger and larger chains.
Yes.
does make you worry that eventually, you know, someday there's just going to be one newspaper for the whole country, and maybe there'll be one publishing house, which I think would be a tragedy. No, that is not a good thing. Although it does seem to be that we're in a period where this kind of consolidation is happening in just about every form, you know, of business that there is. It's certainly, you know, at least with all the entertainment end of things, you know, probably, Hans, in your lifetime and mine, we aren't going to see that change. And there are, you know, there's the phenomenon of the celebrity authors now, who are people famous for something who suddenly are churning out books, and, you know, most of them can't write, and it would, you know, probably be a fine thing if they weren't doing that. I mean, there's an awful lot of stuff that comes out every year. I think, I mentioned that figure of 17,000 fiction books. There were altogether in the United States in 2003 about 150,000 books published, 150,000 titles. That's a lot of books.
Yes.
And you can be sure that, you know, a great number of those are probably not worth someone's money or time.
It also seems tragic, or perhaps it will be help, actually, that anybody who used to say, I could write a book, nowadays they do write a book.
They absolutely do, because we haven't even touched on the whole self-publishing phenomenon, and that's growing. That is not going away either. And, you know, an awful lot of those books come our way as book reviewers, too, and most of them, you know, simply aren't worth anyone's time, although there are some aspects of self-publishing that I think might make some sense. People who are doing, how to put this, you know, perhaps books about something local in their area, they will find readers. And, you know, and some of them aren't badly written. I don't want to say that, you know, I don't want to paint everything with the same brush. Largely, they're not wonderful.
I think the New York Times absolutely refuses to even look at self-published books.
Most of the newspapers don't do them.
But you do. You may do one if it looks just right.
I am not probably ever going to give a full-fledged review to a self-published book. But what I will do, as I had mentioned before, when we do those short pieces in our calendar section, if there's a local writer who's self-published a book but is known in the area, and perhaps the book is about something, you know, that has happened in Connecticut,
right,
and there may be an interest in the subject of the book, I certainly, you know, can do a 5 or 6 inch piece saying that so-and-so is going to be reading from his or her book on whatever. I have no problem with that. I think, you know, that's a fair way of giving some publicity to it, but I don't review it in the same way that I would review a Toni Morrison novel. It's, you know, the same way that most papers do not review community theater productions, but they'll tell people that they're happening.
Right. Am I correct in thinking that the Hartford Courant is quite in the van of interest in books among newspapers of that reach and that
well,
size?
Well, I like to think so. I wouldn't argue with that.
You do. You do this spring. What is it called? In April.
The Writers' Conference?
Can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, this is something that I'm involved in, although, you know, it's been going on for 10 years at the paper, so it certainly predates my job as books editor. The Courant, with the help of the Poynter Institute, puts on every April a two-day writer, what we call the National Writers' Workshop. This brings in authors and journalists from around the country who come and give talks, you know, morning through afternoon. We usually draw anywhere from about 650 to 800 people who come to listen. And it's just a fantastic operation. This year we had Morley Safer was one of our speakers. We had Gail Collins, who is the chief of the editorial board at the New York Times. We had Jennifer Boylan, who is a Wesleyan graduate who now teaches at Colby College, who wrote an amazing memoir, because when Jennifer was at Wesleyan, Jennifer was James at that time, and wrote a touching memoir called She's Not There, of, you know, her transformation. That was a very interesting talk. We had Dick Pohlman, who covers national politics for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I'm leaving out. We had Eleanor Clift, who writes for Newsweek. Many, many people. We usually have about 40 speakers, as you know, because you were one.
Yes, that was great.
Roger Rosenblatt came and spoke this year. It's everyone from, you know, writers of fiction to people who are strictly newspaper reporters and editors, so it encompasses a very wide range of writing, and it's just a terrific experience for everybody involved. And we did our 10th year this year, and I'm hopeful that this will go forward.
No, it is amazing indeed, I know that. And I wonder, is this bibliophile attitude of the paper, to call it that way, does it depend on one person, for instance, would a change of publisher kill that, or is it?
No, I've been at the paper, you know, under several, there have been several different publishers and managing editors in the time that I've been there, and there's been a consistent interest always in our having a very lively book section that, you know, speaks to a pretty wide range of readers, and it's you know, very nicely supported by the paper's upper management, and I'm delighted to be able to say that.
How do you explain this? How did this came about, do you know?
I think my feeling is that the readership of The Current has always demanded this. I mean, as far back as I can remember, I grew up in Hartford. I've lived here my entire life, and there was always, you know, a good book section and an interest in it. I think Connecticut has a well-educated population, generally speaking. People really care, and, you know, people want this, and a good newspaper, you know, responds to that.
Right. Well, listen, Carol, I think you, on behalf of all writers living in Connecticut, you do a terrific job there.
Well, thank you.
And hope you will carry it on.
Well, I hope to keep doing it for a while. It's without doubt, for me personally, the best job I have ever had in journalism, and I'm not planning to give it up anytime soon, so
good.
Hopefully this will continue to work well for all of us.
Well, thanks a lot for telling us all this.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show.
Well, you're cheering us up.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You have listened to Literary Discord, the book program of WPKN Radio on 89.5 FM and other non-commercial radio stations. We are on the air each fourth Thursday of the month at 12 noon, and the program is repeated each second Tuesday of the following month at 9:30 in the evening. You have listened to a conversation with Carol Goldberg, book editor of the Hartford Current. I am Hans Koning, and our producer is Scott Harris. Thank you for listening.